This is episode number 777 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Hellboy, Gotham Academy, Marvel, and more. Our comics this week will be Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows number 5, Secret Empire number 1, and Misfit City number 1. And our Out of the Long Box this week will be Battle Classics number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here as always with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well, but we forgot to mention sore because I started softball again. And I'm realizing now that when I played last Tuesday, I was still trying to recover from the Tuesday before.
Sure.
So my injuries are the time of recovery is now probably 10 to 12 days, which I'm not going
to
get.
It's well documented that veteran players need to know when to rest.
Oh.
You know what I mean? They got to take care of their bodies.
But we're 4-0.
But look, you eat right, you always stay fully hydrated. I'm sure everything will be fine.
Yes, yes.
Well, you know what's going to be fine, Matthew? A new Hellboy movie.
Yes, it would.
To have us jump into our news. And there is going to be one.
Perfect.
Because, Matthew, it's been announced by Mike Mignola himself that there is going to be a new Hellboy movie, and it is going to be a rated R movie.
Wow, very
good. He announced on Facebook this week that there is going to be sort of a reboot of the franchise. It's going to be darker. It's going to be gorier. It's going to be rated R. Now, the bittersweet part of that is that basically sticks a fork in the notion that Guillermo del Toro will be able to finish his Hellboy trilogy.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, we would have loved to have seen Ron Perlman come back. However, listen to who is going to be playing Hellboy. David Harbour, which you might not recognize the name right away, but when you think of the sheriff in Stranger Things,
wow,
he is your new Hellboy.
It works.
Yep.
Perfect.
So apparently he is going to be Hellboy. Mike Mignola did confirm that Del Toro is not returning. However, Neil Marshall, the director of The Descent, is going to be stepping into the director spot. And I believe that Neil Marshall is also the director of the movie Doomsday, which was kind of like a spiritual successor to Escape from New York.
Yes.
Which I freaking loved.
Didn't we see that?
I think we saw it together in the theater.
Yes.
And I love that movie. And
we did see that.
And I believe that is his as well. So that is exciting news for anybody that is a Hellboy fan. Yes, it's disappointing that we will not see a third movie in the Guillermo del Toro trilogy. However, I think that that is a very dark universe, and there is a lot of different ways that you could go with that. So I'm excited for that.
I think I've always put Hellboy as one of my favorite comic book movies. The first one, I thought the second one was amazing. The animated ones that they've done afterwards were really good. But the first movie, to me, really seemed to capture the feel of what a living comic book is.
Yes. And I thought the second movie, I mean, the thing about any Guillermo del Toro movie is the creature design and the set design and the atmosphere and the look of the movie. They're so good.
Yes.
It's like a mixture of a comic book and just like these beautiful imaginative, like I put him in the same kind of realm as like a Clive Barker, who he just has this mix of horror and dark fantasy that he brings together to everything that he does. And I love that about him. So even when you look at like Pacific Rim, just the design of that movie and stuff, super, super great. So, but again, if Mike Mignola is excited about it,
oh yeah,
I'm excited about it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to question the creator when he's looking to have something that's a little bit darker. Go for it, man.
Yeah, and you can tell that when you see the original two movies that Mike Mignola had a lot to do with those. Like Del Toro, it was his baby, but he had Mignola in there because to me, that is why that movie is so, so good.
Sure.
Both of them are.
Absolutely. In sadder news for me, Matthew, Gotham Academy apparently is coming to an end.
Oh, no.
I saw a recent solicit this week for the final story arc of Gotham Academy. I'm really kind of bummed out about that.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing now a lot of the even sort of fan favorite sort of cult hits, their time is running short.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bummer. I'm going to talk about that when we talk about Marvel in a minute as well. But it seems like that's a book to me that I don't know exactly what the sales numbers were, but I'm guessing they're sort of lower end of the pack. But it was like a beloved book.
Yes.
It was a very well-received book by fans. It was very critically well-received. And the idea of having this, you know, Scooby-Doo slash Harry Potter style book set in the Batman universe to me was just so interesting from the very beginning. And I have loved it all the way through. It was a little inconsistent in the end of sort of the first semester season arc and the beginning of the second semester, but it's right back to the best that it's been.
Yeah.
And so that's really kind of disappointing to me. It sounds like though they're going to get to end it in the way that they want to, which is good, but I am very sad to see that series end because I really, really love that series. And that kind of got me thinking about sort of books that we might see getting canceled pretty soon, because I read another article this week over on Cosmic Book News. It was written by Matt McGlowan. And I think there's a lot of speculation here, but he was saying Marvel Comics continues to suffer from dwindling sales as it's looking likely that upwards of almost 30 titles will be canceled.
Well, they've got 900 of them each month. So,
and this is off the April sales that we talked about in our last episode. He said sales for April's issues reveal 28 titles have sold less than 20,000.
And that's not good.
Which is right around the cancellation threshold number. I'll gladly point out that when I was promoting Abnett and Lanning's Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova, that they sold a solid 35K each. So I don't know if he was saying promoted it on the website or if he actually did some promotional work for Marvel. But in any case, he did a list of titles that are either already announced as canceled or who are on the bubble because of sales numbers. And I will read those in a moment. But that whole 20,000 issue thing, where I actually saw this story was on Jimmy Palmiotti's Facebook page.
Yes, I remember seeing that
too. And he was posting about it saying, I'm just shocked at how many books are selling less than 20K.
Yeah.
And so here are the books that he listed. Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 21, sold 18,650. Gwenpool, number 14, 17,000, almost 18,000. Captain Marvel, number 4, just around 18,000. U.S. Avengers, that was a big book that they were touting a few weeks ago. Number 5 sold about 18,000. Ultimates 2, number 6, sold a little over 17,000. Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme, number 7, sold around 17,000. Man-Thing, number 3, about 16,000. Hawkeye, number 5, about 16,000. Totally Awesome Hulk, 16,000. Spider-Man 2099, the last issue sold 15,000 and change. I'm really worried about that one. Electra number 3, 15,000 and change. Silver Surfer number 10, 15,000 and change, which is really surprising. World of Wakanda number 6, 14. And that has an asterisk, which means that has already been canceled. Nova's already been canceled. Silk has been canceled. And I knew about that one and I was bummed about it. Thunderbolts has been canceled. Kingpin, Rocket Raccoon, Power Man and Iron Fist. Bullseye doesn't look like it's been canceled, but it's only a mini, but that sold just over 12,000. Squirrel Girl sold just over 11,000. Let's see what else. Great Lakes Avengers, 8,000 and change.
Wow.
Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, about 8,000. Hellcat is being canceled. Mosaic is being canceled. And Miss Marvel, the last issue, which was number 17, sold just over 20,000. Now, that's not to say that any of those books that were not already being canceled who are around that mark are definitely getting canceled. Yep. But what he's kind of pointing out is that that's sort of the danger zone. And there's a lot of books in the danger zone there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good books.
A lot of good books. Miss Marvel, especially, is one of my favorite books from Marvel. And I would be really bummed to see that go. And that was what got me thinking about, you know, I wonder where Gotham Academy sales were. Because Gotham Academy, it to me, feels like one of those books. Like, that is not necessarily going to be a huge hit with the Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman fans who are the old school diehard fans. Maybe Gotham Academy isn't going to be their cup of tea.
Mm.
But I felt like a Gotham Academy, a Miss Marvel, books like that are your bridge books. They're your bridge to bringing in new readers. And so to me, you kind of want to keep them around even if you are losing a little bit of money on them. Because as you said, with the amount of titles that Marvel puts out, there's other places to cut.
And that's the thing. That's the thing that bothers me is that, you know, if nobody's buying it, I understand. I mean, you can look at the, you know, that, yes, this is a, it's a female character. It's a great lead. I mean, Silk kind of surprises me because I saw three Silks at Hudson Valley Comic Con.
Oh, Cindy Moon, definitely
a huge character,
popular
that's
character in terms of cosplay and stuff like that. And, but again, I feel like that book in particular, I feel like Spider-Woman is another book that was recently canceled that fell into that same thing. Both of those books and many more were affected by the stupid every year reboot thing.
Yeah.
Both of them went through new number ones and they weren't even that old to begin with.
Yeah.
And that, as much as it's a jumping on point for new readers, it's also a jumping off point for people. And when you're rebooting series and slapping a new number one on top of them, when really you're just in the middle of the same series, Ms. Marvel, another book that was affected by that. So you have these books that are almost like, you know, they're not your number one sellers to begin with. And you're either tying them into events that in some cases lose them readers, or you are rebooting with number ones when really you're in the middle of a story arc.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff to me, it just kicks the feet out from under some of these books.
You mentioned Great Lakes Avengers. Now, if there were only two Avengers books and Great Lakes Avengers, not seven or however many they've got going on, would people be buying Great Lakes Avengers? I tend to think they would. I tend to think that book would do better if there were less Avengers titles out there. That is where I think Marvel really, really hurts themselves. And it's the sort of their, you know, the attrition of themselves.
And but the other thing, too, is that some of those books, and Great Lakes Avengers is one, I associate with certain people.
Yes.
To me, the fact that they launched a Great Lakes Avengers book and Dan Slott was not the person writing that book, I don't understand that. Because for years, we were clamoring. He did the Deadpool summer event. He did the great the Christmas one, which I talk about every single year. Every single year. And that's a group that is only going to appeal to a certain audience to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so to not have the creator that people kind of expect to be helming that series on it, to me, is another, maybe now wasn't the time to launch that series then, you know? So I don't know. But yeah, disappointing to see all of those books sort of on the bubble and to see some of them go from my pull list, which is kind of a real bummer. So yeah, not a great week for me in terms of seeing that books I like are either already canceled or on their way out. So, but you know what makes me feel better, Matthew, when we talk about books that we love. And that brings us into our comics for the week. And I am going to start off today with a book called Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows. Now, this is a book that warms the hearts of Spider-Man fans. It is number 5. This is written by Jerry Conway, who we all love. Nathan Stockman is the artist. Jesus Abertov is the colorist. Clayton Coles does the letters. And the editor is Darren Shan. Now, Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows takes place in a world where Peter and Mary Jane are married. And they have a young daughter named Annie. And she also has spider powers. And what we saw in the first arc of this book is they faced off against an old Fantastic Four villain in the Mole Man. And they sort of learn to work together as a crime-fighting family. You have Mary Jane, who is able to sort of tap into Peter's powers. And she calls herself Spinneret. And you have Spiderling, who is Annie. And the three of them are sort of fighting bad guys together. Usually it's Peter and Mary Jane, but it's hard to keep Annie from wanting to get in on the action. And as we open this one, you see that it is a Tuesday night in the Parker home, and they are all sitting on the couch, and Peter and Mary Jane are exhausted because they were out fighting bad guys all day, and Annie is jumping around the entire room, and she's saying, "You guys know what day it is, right? It's Tuesday. It's Tuesday." It reminded me of that commercial for Geico. Guess what day it is?
Yes.
That's what she's basically saying. She's like, "It's Tuesday. You know what Tuesday is? It's family fun night." And so Peter and Mary Jane are like, "Can we just like take a nap or something?" And she's like, "No, we have to go and do something fun. It's family fun night. And I have the perfect thing. There's this brand new place that just opened called Bouncy Bunny. And it's basically like a Chuck E. Cheese or a Showbiz pizza place." And she's like, I totally want to go there." And they're like, "Okay, I guess that's where we're going for family fun night." Now, in another part of town at a bar where the D-list villains are hanging out, you have Sandman, who is sitting around with a bunch of goons and basically saying, "Look, this is the plan. We're going to go in and we're going to rob this bank, and they have a security system. This is how we're going to get around it." And he's mixing his metaphors. He's saying, "This thing's going to be, it's a cakewalk." And the guy's like, "I think you mean a piece of cake." what are you making fun of the way I talk? And he's like, no. He knocks one guy out of the chair. So they're going over this job and you see that the bank that they're going to rob, which is Empire State Bank, is right next to the Bouncy Bunny, which is the new place that Peter and Mary Jane are taking their daughter. So now you go over into another part of town over where Oscorp is and you see that Normie Osborn, who is Harry's son, is a 10-year-old genius who has taken over Oscorp after his father's death. So Harry is dead and you have Normie who is running the company now. And he is, just like his family line, wanting to take down Spider-Man, but he's also seen that there's a young girl around his age who appears to have superpowers that's out there, and he's kind of infatuated with her. So he at one hand wants to take down Spider-Man, but he's also very enamored with Annie and wants to get any information that he can on her. And you can see that he is using all of Oscorp's resources to develop technology that is going to take down Spider-Man. And so now we cut back over to the Bouncy Bunny, and Annie's having a fantastic time. She's with her buddy. The two of them are running around in the ball pit. They're having a great time. Peter and Mary Jane are sitting there with the parent of the other kid that's there. I think her name is Gloria. And they're just, you know, talking about how they have to listen to the same music over and over and over again in this place, when all of a sudden you have Annie who is crawling through one of the tunnels over the ball pit, and she gets like this vision. And it seems like her spider sense is almost like precognition. And so she runs down to Peter and Mary Jane. She's like, oh my gosh, I just had this vision of like somebody's breaking into a bank and something bad's going on. And so they end up suiting up, and sure enough, right next door, you've got Sandman who's busting into this bank with these guys. And so they end up going next door and having a huge fight with Sandman and the thugs that he has there. And there's some great banter, even among the thugs, like they're arguing with each other. They're kind of a bunch of misfits. But you see that while the battle is ensuing, while, you know, Sandman shows up and Spidey and Mary Jane show up and they're all fighting together and things are going crazy, one of the henchmen goes into the vault and goes to a very specific box and pulls out a little like chest, a little container from it, and leaves. So he kind of slips away while the main battle is going on. And then we go back to the main fight, and you've got some absolutely fantastic artwork here from Nathan Stockman of some great scenes with Sandman and with Mary Jane and Annie and Peter. And how they end up stopping him is because there's three of them, they can actually web him up completely and put him in like a cocoon. And that's how they end up taking the Sandman down. And he's like baffled because there's three of them there. But it's a fun fight. It's cool to see them working together in a much more organized fashion than they were in the first arc, where they were just kind of learning how to work with each other. But the real thing here is that you see that this henchman that got away, he goes back and meets with Normie Osborn. And whatever he brought him, it's some sort of a chip, some sort of a piece of technology. Normie seems to think this is the key to him being able to develop technology to take Spider-Man down. And so you see that the whole thing, the whole bank robbery, they had just enlisted the help of the Sandman as a big distraction so that he could get out of there with the thing he was really looking for. And as the book winds down, you have Peter and Mary Jane and Annie going back home after their family fun night outside, and the three of them collapse on the couch and end up going to sleep. And that's the way that this particular issue ends. So what I love about this series is that, especially now, and I think I might have mentioned this once before, without us having a Fantastic Four book right now, this has become the Fantastic Four book for me. This is the family book. And if you were someone who hated, you know, the whole Mephisto thing, and you thought that Peter and Mary Jane should end up together, this is that. Like, this is happening right now. It's Peter and Mary Jane and their kid in a world where they are all together and they're all superheroes, and it's fun, but it's also deeper than you think it would be. Again, this whole thing with Normie going on here and what's happening at Oscorp, like, there's a lot of stuff going on in this book. So it's a rich book, but it's also a book that's a lot of fun and has that great family feel. So if you are missing the Fantastic Four, or if you are missing the old Peter Parker, Mary Jane stuff, then Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, this is a book that you should absolutely be reading. I don't know what the sales numbers are on it, but I hope it doesn't go anywhere anytime soon, because I am really enjoying it. And now that I just said that out loud, that probably means that it's going to get canceled by about issue 9, but I hope it doesn't.
So we are going to now be talking about a book that is probably the biggest newsmaker in the last couple months. That is Secret Empire number 1.
Uh-huh.
So this one, I'll give you the little elevator pitch. A cosmic cube transferred Steve Rogers' Captain America into the ultimate Hydra sleeper agent. And after months of scheming and manipulation, the country is now under the control of Hydra. So that's a big part that you need to know, because I did not know this when I started reading this and then went back and read this, because I usually don't read these pages. I'll just dive right into the story. Earth's most powerful heroes are stranded beyond Earth's planetary defense shield and at the mercy of, the Chitauri invasion, or trapped inside the
Chitauri, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, are the alien race that showed up in the first Avengers film, the Chitauri.
Okay. I think they,
I don't know if they existed in the comics before that, or if this is something that, and again, I know that obviously they were well established in the movie universe, but yep.
The last couple pages with that part. Or the heroes are trapped inside the impenetrable Dark Force bubble that currently envelops New York City. A handful of heroes that remain must work in the shadows to oppose Captain America's sinister regime or face dire consequences. So the writer Nick Spencer, penciler Steve McNiven, inker Jay Leiston, and colorist Matthew Wilson, letters by VCs Travis Lanham. So we have sort of the setup of this. Now, we know Captain America is a Hydra agent, so that is pretty much what we're starting with. But as we start the story, we're starting out in Greensboro, and I'm assuming Greensboro, North Carolina. And you have a kid who's getting out of the car, and the driver looks like an older brother going, "Come on, Jason, don't get bummed, dude." And he goes, "Look, it's a bag. It's a lunch bag. It's classic. You know, I'm sorry that you lost your lunchbox, but this is it, man. We always used to have paper bags." And he's like, I didn't lose it. Marcus stole it. And he goes, yeah, Marcus is a tool and his sister steals tips. But look, I'll see what I can do about getting you another one, all right? And he goes, really, a Captain America lunchbox? He goes, yep, Captain America. Now get moving before you're late. You see him get out of the car. The teacher's getting the class all assembled. And she's talking about, okay, so what we're going to talk about some history. So what does that mean? And all the kids jump up out of their seats and go, Hail Hydra. So now you see what's going on. And now the teacher is talking about, you're kind of coming in a little later, and she says, and that is why Baron Strucker was put to death for his treason. Now coming back to American history, who can tell me who ran the United States Super Soldier Program? Yes, Jason, Abram Erskine. Okay, well, yeah, you know that that's not correct, but the answer is, you know, a little bit buried under that. Now, that's kind of an interesting thing, because it was Erskine, then it was Professor Reichstein. I mean, there's been different names, and when they kind of rewrote the history of Cap in the 70s and 80s, they said, oh, that was a code name.
Uh-huh.
So she's kind of explaining about the things that are going on. And she's, you know, then a kid's like, but, you know, I thought we won the war. And he's like, yeah, we won the war, Jason, but that's why we call it the Great Illusion. And then she proceeds to go into a whole history of what has now been accepted as a history. I started reading this and I'm thinking three or four pages in going, this is Man in the High Castle. This is absolutely Man in the High Castle. This is an alternate reality, an alternate version of history that somewhere on the other side is the real history. And that real history is known. So I was like, wow, I don't know if I should be upset that it seems like they stole this whole premise, or should be excited because I love Man in the High Castle. I think it's a great idea. So you're going more into the whole thing where you're seeing a teacher has a poster saying, hey, kids, I want you to hail Hydra. And there's a Cap poster. And the teacher's like, so what does that tell us to do? Trust authority, punish weakness, report threats. So then all of a sudden a kid goes, hey, I want to report a threat right now. I want to report that kid. And he's like, you know, he was talking about some things and somebody said that they saw his brother do something really weird in the dumpster behind a restaurant. And you see that that's the kid who stole this other kid's lunchbox. And he's like, you're a liar. And he goes, no, I think your brother's a freak. And the kid's like, no, he isn't. So they're going to start a fight. And where it really gets kind of funny is all of a sudden you see that brother running into the house. And he's like, hurry, 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 like he's got to pee. And he gets in there and he opens up his mouth and throws up a Captain America lunchbox.
Okay.
So apparently his inhuman power, because you find out that he's an inhuman.
Okay.
His inhuman power that he has hidden is that he can throw stuff up, like lunchboxes. Or if he wants something, he can just throw it up.
All right.
So there is a great scene, I'll show you, Brian, of him mouth fully ajar.
Oh, yes, it is.
With a lunchbox coming out. And all of a sudden, bam, there it is. Wash it up, give it to your brother, good as new. Now, as this is happening, you have a couple
Hydra agents. I could stand throwing up all the time, though.
Yeah. Even if you really wanted it. Like, oh, I really
On the one hand, is it cool that you could basically make whatever you want to make? Sure, that's cool.
But you got to
throw it up. I mean, I guess that's better than having to, like, poop it out.
Yeah. It would be a little tougher.
I need a new lunchbox. Oh, I cannot do a lunchbox.
No.
I cannot do
matchbox
a lunchbox.
Matchbox cars, pencils. I that's mean, what
how
we're
about a roll
with.
Of quarters?
Yeah. We're staying with the small stuff. So as he's starting to clean himself up and put the lunchbox underneath a chair, the door kicks in. It's Hydra agents. And that's where it is. And they call him an inhuman. So that's where it ends. Now you see this young kid getting off a train in Las Vegas. And he's walking through and you're hearing, hey, welcome to the world of Hydra, blah, blah, blah. There's a train moving on platform one brought to you by Hydra Works. So you're seeing that this is
just... A lot of branding there.
Yeah. You're just seeing that this is the future. Now we find Miss Marvel, who is trapped out in space. And she is giving a distress signal to the rest of the world, or the universe that's out there, saying this is Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. We're on a planet. Our planet is Earth. We're in big trouble, and we've been attacked. And you see, as she's trying to get out, all of a sudden the message is getting blurred and blurred. So somebody is now blocking the message. Now you turn the page, you get that little story of what's going on in the world, but you also get all the players of what's going on. Now back to Las Vegas, you see that little dude is running and he's being chased by Hydra agents, much like we just saw the guys that took Lunchbox Puker. And as he runs through, the door
opens
up.
He's got to come up with a better code name than that.
So he opens up a door. This kid's like, hey, dude, over here. Opens up the door. The kid jumps in and they close the door. And he goes, hey, are you that kid? He's like, oh, yeah. We're the one that we've been talking online. He goes, you got that thing you wanted to talk about? You wanted to show us? Oh, yeah. So he starts running, and you see that the kid he's running with is the Hulk. Turns into the Hulk, punches out all those agents, and he's telling the kid, he's like, oh, wow, that's pretty good. And he goes, good? And he goes, yeah, but it's interesting because you don't have any pants. Because when he ripped and turned into the Hulk, he ripped his pants. So now all of a sudden, Spider-Man shows up. It looks like a Vulture shows up. And the kid's like, oh, my gosh, who are you? And then a girl Vision comes through the wall. And they're all like, they're going, hey, we're patriots, just like you are. And he goes, okay, my real name's Rasham. And he goes, I'm from New York. And he goes, the Hulk goes, do you have what you said you had? And he goes, yep, I have it. And you see Spider-Man open it up and go, we need to get out of here now, people. And I believe it's the ultimate Spider-Man. It's not our Peter Parker. It's
okay.
Miles Morales. So they finally get to their park where they're supposed to be, and they're in a car and they're driving through. Now you go to Captain America, who is sitting at a meeting. Or no, he's not sitting at a meeting yet. He is sitting there as this Cthulhu-looking monster is going to destroy the city. And the monster's like, I'm going to destroy you, Captain America. And he's like, yeah, you know what? Why don't I tell you right now? Leave. I won't come after you. You can go back to where you came from. Don't bother these people again. But the second you even do anything, I will kill you and destroy you. And the alien's like, ah, ha, 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 sure you can't. And he's like, all right, so let's get ready to rumble. So now all of a sudden, before the fight starts to even happen, you have Thor show up, Scarlet Witch, the white Spider-Man. There's like a white Spider-Man or Spider-Woman that has like sort of, you know, like
you sure
metal
it's not Spider-Gwen?
I don't know. Does Spider-Gwen have tendrils?
Could be the Iron Spider.
I think it's Iron Spider.
Okay.
I will say I'm going to go with Iron Spider because that just looks about right. I'm sorry, Black Ant.
Oh.
There's a Black Ant.
Okay.
You've got Taskmaster. You've got all these guys. Pretty much a lot of people that Captain America fought, and they jump on this alien. And he's like, oh, no, wait. And then you just see him ripping this dude into slices and pieces. Deadpool is one of them too. So now you go back and you've got Captain America, who is sitting there listening to like sort of this, you know, state of the union of what's going on with Hydra. Dr. Faustus is there and he's talking about, you know, we need to take care of this New York problem. You've got people, you've got heroes in New York that we've got to take care of. And granted, we've captured quite a few, but we need to get the rest of them. And you have Arnim Zola, who is there, and he's talking about an incident that happened in Nevada, explaining how somebody showed up in Las Vegas, a young kid, has something, a bunch of heroes showed up. We probably should concentrate our efforts on getting whatever that is, because that's a pretty big deal. And then you have Baron Zemo and Arnim Zola kind of fighting with each other. Cap's trying to keep the peace. And it's really interesting because this is where I think you start to get the idea and the realization that Captain America is – a Hydra agent. He's hanging out with Miss Hydra. You've got a lot of his rogues gallery are sitting at a table with him. And they are talking about all the bad stuff that they're going to do and what they need to do to fix this. And now you go back and you've got like a Fantasticar that has all the people that were on in Vegas. They've got the kid. They show up. The Thing is there. And the Thing is going, where did you guys just go? They're like, oh, well, we had to go get somebody in Las Vegas. And then Black Widow shows up and says, that was stupid. You've just made yourself visible. Now people know that you're here. This
so these
is
guys
not,
are basically the resistance.
Yeah, this yep. is not going to be a good thing. Then an arrow hits, and you see that it is Hawkeye. And Hawkeye looks almost to be the leader of this. And they're like, simply run? Simply run? What are you talking about that you did some stuff and you ran away? And they said, do you realize that everybody knows where you are? And we have a hideout. And the key part of hideout is hide. You now have everybody here. This is on Twitter. This is on YouTube. This is on Facebook. You guys are bleeping idiots. And they're like, well, you know, how many views did it get? Because they're young kids. They're worried about the views. And they're like, look, this is not a good thing. You brought a civilian here also. So they draw guns and arrows on him. He opens up his bag and shows them that they have something that he needs. And they're like, where did you get this from? And he goes, well, I got it from Rick Jones. And they all kind of pause a little bit, and they said, take him to the drum. So they bring him downstairs. But before that, you have Sharon and Cap are having dinner. Sharon Carter and Steve Rogers are having dinner. And it is not going well because Steve is like, look, you know I loved you. I've always loved you. And she goes, how can you say that? Because you have betrayed everything that you said you were. You said you were a patriot fighting for a country. And he's like, I am a patriot fighting for a country. She goes, no, you're fighting for a vision of what this country's supposed to be. And it is a 3 or 4 page, just a really kind of gut-wrenching moment where Sharon is laying it out there saying the real Steve Rogers would never have done this. And I'm ashamed of what you are. And he's like, oh, I am the real Steve Rogers. And she's like, prove it. Do at least one thing that I would recognize that the man that I used to love still is in there. So all these little things, like when she was saying that, you know, the real Steve Rogers wouldn't, and he's like, I am. It almost seems like they're maybe kind of implying this isn't the real Steve Rogers, that maybe there is something a little bit different. But with the world living and being the way it is, obviously the Cosmic Cube has completely screwed this all around. So you now have – so you have Sharon say, you want to do something right, spare Steve Jones – or Steve Rick Jones. So he goes downstairs. Rick is laying in a cell, and Steve goes in and goes, hey, I recognize the song. This was playing on one of those playlists that you made me when I came out of ICE. And he's like, well, yeah, great to see you here. And he's like, hello, Rick. And he's trying to play it off like, hey, you know what? We're still friends, right? And Rick's like, look, you've got me in jail. You've got all my people arrested. I used to dress up like Bucky and help you out. And now I'm your worst enemy. And he's like, look, you're not my enemy. You're an enemy of the state. And you've got to understand that if you do not bow down to our wishes and do what you need to do, you're going to be locked up here and maybe worse. And he goes, I just need you to say two words, Hail Hydra. And Rick's like, he starts singing some song. And he goes, you know what? Come on back, Cap. Listen, buddy, whatever. I didn't mean to say that to offend you and upset you. He goes, you know, you always come out on top in the end. And he goes, you were always my hero. He goes, why don't you be my hero now? And then you see Steve walk out with his head down, just completely depressed. You are seeing Ant-Man in there. And now you have all the heroes, like Wonder Man is there. Giant Man is there. They're all talking to this new kid that brought this valuable information. And he goes in and brings this thing to what is an artificial intelligence Tony Stark. It's the AI Tony Stark.
Okay.
But his hands, like he manipulates, it's cool because he's hidden in this blue shield in blue form. But when he wants to physically manipulate something, he puts himself into these like Iron Man gloves and he can work the gloves.
Uh-huh.
So I think that that is a really cool, cool thing. Actually made me care about Iron Man.
It's going to take more than that for me, but I'm glad that you liked it.
So what's good is that you're going to get a free code so you can read this book for yourself.
That's awesome.
And not spend the $5. However, I did not look at this and go, I wasted $5. Even if the story wasn't that great, which it's not, I think it's really good. You get a, I mean, I'm closing, that's a thick book. You definitely get your money's worth on this one. So this kid is now being told by artificial intelligent Tony Stark about what has happened and how Hydra took over. They started killing heroes. They started doing all sorts of bad stuff. We hid to the mountains. We got out here. And this is where we are right now. And it's not really the best situation, but this is what we need to do. And now you have Steve, who was hanging out with like Dr. Fate. It looks like Dr. Strange is doing this incantation. And you've got Madame Hydra, who is the woman that he met when he was a little kid, like when in the 20s, the one who manipulated his mother right. and him, is now Madame Hydra. And she's like, oh, Ilsa. She's like, you know what? Don't call me Madame Hydra. You call me Ilsa. We have a relationship. And he's like, nope, but you need to call me Steven. And she's like, well, you know what? We need to talk a little bit more about some things. And she says, you know, I don't need to fight. I don't need to fight you. And I don't need Vision to know that there's something troubling you. And he's like, it's just, she goes, you're torn. He goes, yeah, I'm torn because these are my friends. This is not what was supposed to happen. You know, I brought them in. I've got Dr. Faustus that's trying to manipulate everybody. These are all the things that are going on right now. And she starts to say a couple things that I don't want to say. I don't want to spoil. I want people to go read this. But she pretty much says that the world is now in the world, in the vision of the cosmic cube. And we need to understand that. And this is all what's going on according to the plan of this cosmic cube. And she goes, but the time to reclaim, it's time to reclaim what is ours. So it almost looks like she is now trying to say, yeah, this whole thing with Hydra is not what we planned. You've got some goons in there, and I think that we need to fix this. So Steve Rogers is now going to address the world. And he sits there and he's like, good morning, my fellow Americans, and hail Hydra. We need to take care of things and we need to do the things that prove ourselves, prove our worth. And I need to prove myself to you, America, and to Hydra. And as he is doing this, you're seeing Rick Jones being taken to a wall to be shot. And as he's talking about stuff, he says, you know, evil may have finally won and it's our turn to take that back. And you see as he's giving this speech, they shoot Rick Jones. Like Rick Jones sticks his head up and says, Avengers assemble. They shoot and kill him, and he's up against a pole dead, which I've been a Cap fan for my entire life. That is a huge thing to see Rick Jones there. Whether or not this snaps back into something completely different, that's a little bit of a shocking scene for me to see. And then as Steve is saying, you know, we're losing out. We need to not let the – we need to fight back. And you're like, who is he talking about fighting back against? And then as people are starting to look up, they're hearing thuds, they're hearing loud noise. You turn the last page and you see that what looks to be those alien ships from the Avengers movie have now showed up and started to destroy one of the cities. And that is where this issue ends. So I read it. I loved it. I thought it was an amazing story. I know that things are going to snap back to reality, but I think that I mean, I can understand why people are upset, but I think that if you give it a chance, if you give it – I mean, I went to the bookstore. I was there. I went to Most Excellent. I was there like a half hour after you got there.
Okay.
And I walked in and Mason, the owner, said, are you here for your Secret Empire? And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, Brian was just here. He said, you're probably coming to come get it. I picked it up off the shelf and I remember squeezing it before I looked at the price and I went – it's going to be like $7 or $8. So when I saw that it was $5, I thought, all right, I can deal with that. Flipped through it and saw that it wasn't 40 pages of reprints of, hey, if you know, this is Cap before.
Right.
So if you didn't get it, I would take a chance on it. Go read it. Make the opinion for yourself. But understand, too, that they're telling a story. It is going to obviously flip back. But you know what? Just let the story be told. Don't follow into anything. I don't like the fact that Cap just had Rick Jones assassin or killed, but you know what, just let the story tell itself. He threw American flag out of a plane.
Yeah, I think that and I haven't read any of it, so I obviously I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think that the problem is that when Marvel tells people, hey, just wait, man. Yes. Just wait and you know, follow the story to the end and just judge it when it's over, that's easy to say when they're the ones that get the money from that transaction.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like if they – I'm trying to think of a way that they could have messaged that more appropriately to people. Like if they had said, look, we recognize that people seem to be have an idea about this story, mm-hmm. that they are prejudging it before it even happens, or from what information is out there already. And, you know, it seems like you don't trust us on this one. So we're going to make the first two issues of Secret Empire free.
Yeah.
Everybody can go online and read the first two issues of Secret Empire free and then judge it for yourself, you know, yeah. Then check it out. Or how much did they charge for that zero issue?
I don't have the zero. That's the number one.
That's the number one. Yep. So the first issue was $5.
Yep.
Free.
Yeah.
There you go. That's how, like, if they're going to stick with the story and they really want people to give it a chance, then you have to remove some of the investment that they have to make in order to give that story a chance. Because it seems like what they're trying to do is position Captain America as there is a version of Hydra that really is sort of, they want something great.
Yep.
Hydra has now been corrupted by the Nazi side of things, or the really evil side of things. And almost like Cap is saying, well, this isn't the Hydra I signed up for.
Yeah.
I signed up for a Hydra that had a better vision for the world, and this isn't it. But I think, like, what's missing in all that is that it's still Hydra.
Yeah.
He's still a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, now you're trying to create degrees of bad guy. Like, yeah, well, Hydra's bad, but it's not the Nazi Hydra. Yeah. That's the really bad Hydra.
Really,
like,
bad
you don't
ones.
Want the really bad Hydra, you know, and we're not that. So I don't know. It seems like they haven't messaged that very well. And from the stuff that I'm reading, it's saying that he in our world has always been a Hydra agent.
Yeah.
That's not a Cosmic Cube thing.
Yes.
He has been a Hydra agent. So part of Cap's history now is that he is – has always been a Hydra agent. And I think that's the fundamental thing that's breaking this whole thing for people, is the idea that that would ever be true.
And I will play my conspiracy theory card. I will play my marketing card. If I worked for Marvel and I was the head of marketing and they said, we need to create a buzz about this new Captain America book with Steve Rogers coming back. We're going to make him a Hydra agent. We're going to do all sorts of stuff like that. It's going to be maybe a 2-year story. Matt, as a marketer, what are you going to do? What can we do? And my first thought would be, let's create as much negative press as we possibly can. Let's get everybody fired up about this. I have never once believed that – I don't want to say that Nick Spencer did not get death threats. I will not – I don't want to say that. But I will – I am under the impression, and I believe Marvel was the one who created this whole controversy to begin with. Because to be honest – people aren't – like comic books aren't telling –
so basically what you're saying, and this has been said before as well, is there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yes, and I believe that
Marvel is perfectly fine, yep, with people getting fired up about this in a negative way because it still ends up being the number one selling book for April.
Yep. I'm going to call the New York
and
Times.
And some people are picking it up just to see how angry yes, they can get when they read it.
Yep. As a marketer, I'm going to call up Marvel Comics and say – or Carl, I'm going to call – Time Magazine and the New York Post and say, yes, this is Dave. I'm really upset at what they did to Captain America. And then hang up the phone. And hopefully that buzz is going to start. And to be honest, I mean, in our circle of comic book fans.
But I think the only way that that works out. So let's say that that's happened.
Yep.
Let's say that Marvel is behind that whole thing. So the short term gain is that you generate a lot of publicity around this event and hopefully even get people who think they're going to hate it to check it out and give you money around that. And you're telling people overall, trust us, trust us, trust us. Wait till the end of the story. You'll see
yep,
the Cap you know and love is going to be the guy that shows up at the end of the story. So the problem is if they don't deliver that at the end of it, or if it feels like it is forced, or if it feels like basically they've put themselves in a position where they have to deliver a perfect story.
Yep.
Because if they screw it up to the magnitude that they screwed up Secret Wars, where it was late, and they had to add another issue on to the end of it.
Yep.
And it took, and new books were launching before the end of the thing even came out. Like, they completely have to stick that landing, and it has to deliver on what they're promising, which is that everybody who's grown up loving Captain America will still have a reason to love him after this. And so it, and I just wonder if they're miscalculating people being able to accept that. Like, let's just say that at the end of this, they're saying something to the effect of, well, it's true. Cap has always been a Hydra agent. And I know that's really upsetting, but he's been a Hydra agent because he was basically indoctrinated when he was this young child. And so he couldn't, it's not his fault he turned into a Hydra agent because he was indoctrinated as this young child. But what makes, what the big twist in the story is that he realizes that it's been an illusion all along. He realizes that it was wrong all along, mm-hmm. and the values that he holds true are win over the day, and he ends up renouncing Hydra and completely breaking off from Hydra because who he is on the inside is this better person and blah, 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 blah. Like, if that's what their sort of end thing is, I just don't think that's going to be strong enough for people to be like, oh, okay, it's okay that you made him a Hydra agent then, because at least he ended up being a good guy at the end. Like, I think the only way that could work for people is if it was a cosmic cube thing. Like, yep. if it was like Cap would never be that,
yeah.
and we're going to take that all away. But you also lose when you do that, because then people are going to be like, oh, so it was just like one of those dream sequences.
You just created it's Bobby the ending Ewing of Dallas.
Exactly. It's the situation where none of it mattered anyways. And so then they punish you for that. So that's where I feel like, as we talked about before, I might even have talked about it off the air. Like, I feel like they've doubled down on an event where there's no winning scenario for mm-hmm. them. Like, I think from a sales standpoint in the short term, there could be a winning scenario, but I think it hurts them in the long term, and I just don't see how they find their way out of this one. So I'm kind of watching it from afar, from yep. a fascinated standpoint of like, how are they going to get themselves out of this situation? Because it seems like they're in an unwinnable situation that they've created for themselves. I don't feel bad for Marvel. Yeah. They have created that for themselves. And in a lot of ways, Nick Spencer should just not tweet anything ever again, because he's not helping matters at all. He's making them worse, unless you fully subscribe to the theory that you're talking about, which is that no publicity is bad publicity.
And I fall into that, because if I'm a marketer, that's what I'm going to do. You're going to exaggerate things a little bit, you know, hey, 50 people liked it. You know what? 50,000 people liked it. We're just going to start jamming these numbers. A couple people were pissed off. You know what? Thousands of people are pissed off. Come see what they're pissed off about.
That's true. But the other thing that their events often lack is, who is the hero here? Because you're basically saying, well, Cap's the hero.
Yeah.
But you just have to hang on long enough for him to become the hero. You'll see. I know he's not the hero yet. I know he's not there yet, but he will be. He'll be the hero. Whereas I think for people to really care, you have to have, if you're going to do a mega event, you have to have a hero
yep.
that everyone is rooting for and cheering for, not someone who everybody is disappointed in and eventually has a change of heart and turns things around. Like, who is the bad guy? And who is the hero here? It could be Rick Jones is the hero in issue one, but who gives a crap about Rick Jones? Because when has Rick Jones been around? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that he's part of the lore of Captain America, and that he was a sidekick at once.
That's
for Captain
the history.
America.
That's
so there
history.
Is a piece of history there, but that piece of history only matters to people who have stayed with Captain America forever, which is the same group of people you're pissing off right now. So like, it's not like someone who never reads Cap is going to pick that up and say, oh, they killed Rick Jones?
Yeah.
Not Rick Jones. You mean A-Bomb? They killed A-Bomb? Oh my God, I can't believe it. You mean the Hulk sidekick?
Yeah.
I can't believe they killed the Hulk sidekick in Secret Empire number one, because for most of us, Rick Jones is the Hulk sidekick from the cartoon.
Yeah.
No one knows who Rick Jones is. You know what I mean? So like, that's for me, like, if the emotional impact is supposed to be that, holy crap, they killed Rick Jones, we don't care enough about Rick Jones for that to be a colossal loss in that person. And when I say we, I mean most people.
Yes.
You know, certainly there are people who maybe Rick Jones is their favorite character. You know, like for me, it's Spider-Man 2099. Like, sure, if you kill Miguel O'Hara, I'm going to be upset about that. But who else is going to be upset about that? Maybe Peter David. That's all I'm saying about that is, like, who is the hero that you're standing behind here? Like, the other thing too, like, if Captain America was the bad guy, but Bucky was the leader of the resistance, he's the hero. He's the good guy. He's the one that you're behind. Or Sam Wilson or Sharon.
Yep.
Or, like, who is your hero here? And it seems like the hero is going to be Cap, but he's the bad guy right now.
Yep.
So you really have to be invested in Cap and his story arc if you're going to be interested in this event. You know what I mean? So I just
I think you hit one point that was all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? I want to say that was what my argument was all along, but it really wasn't, because you said something when you were talking about, I don't even know who the hero is. I don't even know who I'm supposed to follow. That to me is yet another part of this marketing thing where we have created, you're reading this and you're emotionally confused, you're emotionally angry. Most people are reading this angry because of what you've just done. Well, you know what? You're reading it as the emotion of the characters in this. You're now angry because everybody's angry in this book. You're reading it. You don't know who the hero is because you just took my hero away. Well, you just took the hero away of everybody in the book. So I think that that might be another part of the brilliant marketing of Marvel, or the thing they accidentally stumbled into.
But they're also not messaging that at all, right? So that's where, like, if you were, if that was going to be the message, then you'd have to double down on that, right?
I think that their
message right now is, hey, stick with us.
I think, you know, it's almost like, as sad as it is, I almost think like this is that what has happened is the perfect, again, I'm looking at it from marketing. This is the perfect marketing strategy. And after I read the first issue, I thought, you know what? This is really playing into all the emotions and all the ties of everything going on. I want to say, like, it's almost like, you know, in another year, they're going to say, so that marketing strategy that you guys did, and Marvel marketing, and go, yeah, that's exactly the way we planned it. No, it's not the way you probably planned it, but it's kind of the way it's evolving. I'll be interested after you read it to see what you think about it, because
I'll be borrowing your copy because I'm not gonna invest.
I'll send you the digital code
in this series because it's not interesting to me in that Cap is not one of my favorite heroes, so you have to pull me in a different way, and nothing that I've seen of Secret Empire so far is doing that, and so I do want to read that first issue because I do want to at least have a frame of reference. Because again, I'm speaking ill-informed at this point.
You're from the non-Cap world, yeah.
So I could be completely wrong about everything that I just said, and you can take that with a grain of salt. But that's my sort of outside perspective on that as a Marvel fan who is interested in other parts of the Marvel universe but has not been interested basically in anything that's been going on with the Avengers or their main players for years now. I don't know. My hope, though, is that I don't start seeing Secret Empire all over all the Spider-Man issues and everything. Like, I don't want to start getting sucked into Secret Empire.
Let me check the ad in the middle first, okay?
What's the checklist say? Do I have to worry about that in any of my
books? I got nervous because I'm like, oh, my God, there's an ad for the new Spider-Man book, but it doesn't have Secret Empire on there at all.
What books are involved? That's probably a good thing to say.
So, well, we have Secret – I mean, we have Hydronation.
So that's a new title.
Secret Empire –
that's the main title.
Secret Empire. Secret Empire Underground. Secret Empire United.
Okay, so those are two spinoff books that are
they don't really show anything else. Hydronation. Guardians of the Galaxy is going to have one.
Does it run through the pages of Captain America, the core book?
I don't know.
It does, right?
What I thought was happening was they were going to not – Cap is done until this is over.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back with a new volume. Yet another – there used to be a time when there was pride in owning a Captain America number one.
Mm.
Now I think everybody owns 7 or 8 different Captain America number ones.
Yes.
So there we go.
Interesting. Very interested to see how that plays out both in the court of public opinion and also from a sales standpoint and from a long-term effect standpoint.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right. Well, that's let's put the heavy stuff down for a minute, Matthew. Let's jump over to Boom Studios for another one of their fabulous Boombox titles. This is called Misfit City. It is written by Kirsten Kiwi Smith and Kurt Lustgarten. Illustrated by Naomi Franquise. Colors by Brittany Peer. Letters by Jim Campbell. And edited by Shannon Waters. You would love this book, Matthew, because... we start off in Cannon Cove, Oregon, home to lush seaside forests, pirate legends, tasty oysters, and the filming location of one of the most beloved kids' adventure movies of all time. It's the perfect place to grow up. This book, which is called Misfit City, is essentially about a group of people who live in a town where The Goonies was filmed.
Wow.
That's basically the premise for this book, except... the movie was called The Gloomies, okay? And so as we start off, you have this young woman named Wilder who is working at the coffee hut. And she's sitting at the drive-thru window, and this Jeep pulls up, and blasting over the radio is the theme song from The Gloomies.
Good enough for you. It's good enough for The
Gloomies. It's kind of like that, but it's sort of like what does it say? They come and they go, Gloomies pass as you, blah, blah, blah. And they're kind of going – so you see some of the lyrics, but – so she's there to take their order, and all they want to know is, how do we get to the old lighthouse? How do we get to the – they just want to go to the locations the sites, of the stuff. Yep. So she's like, oh, boy. And she says, well, really, the place you want to go is you want to go to the museum that we have in town with all the props and stuff. And they sort of speed off and are disrespectful to her. And you see that she has another friend there who her name is Karma. So it's Wilder and Karma. And Karma's saying, you know, hey, those guys are jerks. Don't worry about them. And they end up texting their other friend, Macy, who works at the actual museum, to say, you got some people coming and they're, you know, they're kind of jerks. So sure enough, they go to the film museum, the Cannon Cove Film Museum. And what I love about Cannon Cove is when you think of Cannon, you think of 80s action movies, yes, right? So the fact that it's Cannon Cove is pretty cool. So you have this woman, Macy, who works there. And of course, she's waiting for this group of tourists to come so that she can give them the nickel tour. But there's a guy who ends up coming up behind her and scares the living daylights out of her. And he's saying, I'm here to deliver this chest of stuff because this guy passed away and he left it to you, old Captain Denby. So old Captain Denby was this guy that lived in town, and he had a chest full of stuff that he wanted to donate to the museum. So she's like, I guess we have a bunch of other crap here. I might as well take this and throw it in with the rest of it. So this place has become like the dumping ground for anything that, yeah, could be remotely related to the movie that tourists might want to come and see. So he leaves, and then these tourists shows up, and it's like four high school kids or college kids, and they are like the worst kind of fan. Like, so she's trying to explain to them, she charges them all $5 and she's trying to give them the tour. And they're like, yeah, yeah, this stuff is boring. Show us the props and show us this stuff. And she's like, oh, okay, well, these are the sweatpants worn by Dodge in the infamous I Want My Balls Back scene. Oh, that scene changed my life. That scene was the greatest. And so all they care about is like the props, yep, from specific scenes. And it'd be like the truffle shuffle kind, yes, of thing. So like, this is the shirt that Chunk wore in the truffle shuffle, you know? So they're rude to her the whole way through, and they get done with the tour and they're like, that's all there is. And she's like, yeah, if you want to see something really exciting, come see my band play on Friday night. And she gives them a flyer and sort of kicks them out the door. So you see that the existence of this small group of friends in this town is essentially, it's a small town. Oyster farming is their major sort of job. And one of the girls in the group does that for a living. Her name is Dot. And the other one works at the museum. The other one works at the coffee hut. But basically, outside of jerk tourists who come into town looking to find out where all the different locations are and you know, buzz through, that's it,
yeah,
for their lives. So now we go over to the remaining relatives of this Captain Denby. And one of the names is Luther. And the other one, I forget what her name is, but she kind of looks like Cruella de Vil. They're meeting with a lawyer. And they're realizing that they're not really getting much from Captain Denby's passing except for a leaky boat and a crappy old house. And the lawyer's like, I'm sorry. Yeah, the only other thing that was left was this chest that went to the local museum. And the two of them are like, there's got to be something in that chest that's going to be worth something. So now you're seeing like the villain starting to be formed here. So these two want to get that chest that was just donated to the museum. So now we go over to the museum that night, and the girls all get together to play poker. And they have their dog Pip, who is apparently a Scooby-Doo-like dog who can play poker. And so the dog's kind of playing poker with them. Doesn't talk or anything, though. But they're kind of hanging out together, and they take a look at the chest that was donated, and they decide that they're going to open it up. And when they open it up, they see that there is a compass and an old treasure map in there. And Macy, who is the one that kind of works at the museum, is like, I don't care about any of this old junk. You know, let's get back to playing poker. That's what we're all here for. She slams the lid down on the chest, and all of a sudden a secret compartment opens up and another piece of paper rolls out, and it is a different kind of map. And so you have Wilder, who's like, hey, maybe this map is like an important piece of town history. And a couple of the other girls are like, yeah, let's sell it and make some freaking money off of it. And she's like, you know, like, maybe we could get enough to clean up the cove or make it a historical landmark or something, like do something for this town that will elevate it from just being a tourist stop. And Macy's like, yeah, you know, I don't have time for this. I have to go write some lyrics for the gig that I'm playing on Saturday night. Like, I'm not getting involved in any kind of crazy adventures with you guys. And she kind of kicks them all out, and they end up going home for the night. And she gets home and she's working on this song, and she's hanging out with her brother, who I think is in the group with her, and all of a sudden they get a call that the alarm's going off at the museum. So she's got to take her brother's moped and get back to the museum. She goes back there, and when she goes in there, she gets hit in the back of the head and knocked out because clearly someone was in there fishing around or something. And then her friend Wilder shows up to the scene when she's being taken away in an ambulance and checked for a concussion. And Macy's saying, I think you were probably right about that map because someone broke into the museum tonight and they stole something and I can't find the map anywhere. They must have taken the map. So as they're talking, her brother shows up, Macy's brother, and he's like, hey, I finished translating those song lyrics that you wrote. You know, your handwriting's awful, but it was hard to read because you put them on this old piece of paper. And he pulls out the piece of paper that he was reading the song lyrics on, and it's the map. She had shoved it into her pocket and used it to scrawl her lyrics on. And so as the first issue wraps up, you see them looking at this map and realizing maybe this is like a real treasure map. Maybe we ought to get the gang together and go and find out what's actually at the end of it. And so as the first issue ends, they are deciding to take this thing seriously and try to figure out if there really is some treasure in old Cannon Cove. So if you are a fan of the Goonies or the Explorers or any of those 80s Monster Squad and all of those, there's a great thing from the creators in the back that kind of talks about the influences, but it's all those 80s sort of group of kid movies that I don't feel like they make anymore.
No.
Like, they don't make movies like The Goonies or The Explorers or...
Fright Night.
Monster Squad. But Fright Night specifically, was one too, with those three, though, like, the whole, like, the ensemble group of kids that kind of... And there's a kid for everybody to identify with. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. They don't really do that anymore. And this is absolutely a throwback to that. So if you are a huge fan of The Goonies or you dig that sort of 80s kid movie sort of aesthetic, like... then Misfit City is definitely a book that you should be checking out. So very, very cool book. So those are our new books for this week. However, we've got an Out of the Long Box for you, and it features one of Matthew's favorite characters. So Matthew, tell us about Battle Classics.
Battle Classics number one from October of 1978. The reason that I pulled this book out was when I was at Hudson Valley Comic Con a few weeks ago, there was a guy cosplaying Sergeant Rock. And I completely freaked out about that, got my picture taken with him. We even had a battle of Sergeant Rock trivia, which I destroyed him. I will just tell you right now, I destroyed him.
Let's hope he's not listening.
Yes, because then we'll just make it public. But a really cool guy, I believe his name was Chris, former military guy, just loves Sergeant Rock, loves the character, and looked really good when he was walking around. So got me fired up about Sergeant Rock. So the book I'm talking about is Battle Classics number one. This was a reprint series that was supposed to reprint the best war stories ever. And I'll talk a little bit about this after this story. Now, this story was originally from Brave and the Bold. I don't remember which one, but it was a 12-cent issue. And it's called Suicide Mission, and it's written by Robert Knaier, and the art is by Joe Kubert, colors by Mario Wien. And so in the story, this is a story where you bring together the Haunted Tank, Sergeant Rock, and Captain Johnny Cloud before he joined the Losers. And they have to go and they have to find somebody who is trapped in a mysterious armor suit.
Okay.
I don't know why they're in an armor
suit. Sounds interesting.
So as they get there, they're all getting their information. Captain Cloud lands. And as they start to find out, and the person's name is Martin. So Johnny Cloud is flying and he's reading the message that says, you know, you've got to find Martin and bring him back to the American line. So he starts ripping up the note in case that he gets crashed. So as this person, Martin, has this serious information that could turn the tide of the war, obviously. So
that's the best kind of information.
Yep. So as Johnny Cloud is flying, he sees a cart driving by and they send a flare up. And he sees the person is dying, and he goes, you know, are you Martin? He says, oh, no, I'm not Martin, but you got to get Martin out of here. And what ended up happening was Martin is buried in the hay in this cart. So Captain Cloud's like, well, what are you doing? And he said, well, the Nazis captured me and put me in this armor because they knew that if, you know, I would be identified by anybody. So I can't escape. I can't get out of this. Somebody needs to help me get out of this. And as this is happening, the Germans show up in a cart. And again, these war stories back then were very flimsy as far as stories go. The whole story and
they were like episodic.
That's, you know, what
like
it is.
They were meant to be like a Twilight Zone episode, like one and done.
Yes, it is a story of a – it's a small story within a war is kind of what it is. And you could only tell so many stories. So what happens is Captain Cloud gets Henry – or gets Martin in the plane, flies away. Martin starts crying. You see tears coming from the Iron Mask. And he's saying, you know – or Martin's saying, my father, because it was her father. It was his father, Martin's father, that died. I kind of gave it away, but you're not supposed to know who Martin is. So he goes up. All of a sudden, his plane starts to crash, and he happens to crash right where the haunted tank is. So the haunted tank, he gets in the haunted tank. They get Martin, put Martin in the tank as the Germans are starting to attack. And it's, again, just 6, 7, 8 pages of all this stuff going on as they're just – the Germans are trying to capture Martin. And then lo and behold, as everybody's starting to get ready to destroy the tank, Sergeant Rock shows up with Easy Company and saves the day. And as they save the day for this, Sergeant Rock gets involved. And
is it told from the perspective of the guy in the armor?
No, just –
it just skips around.
You're like watching a TV series.
Okay.
You're watching a TV show. So Sergeant Rock is there and a tank is ready to kill everybody. And there's a and they use a lot of the same cliches, but I mean cliches in the most loving way. All I read was war comics growing up. So you have the bazooka guy that's dying and he's dead. And Sergeant Rock screaming, pull the trigger, pull the trigger. The tank's going to run us over. And then Rock gets the bazooka and gets his hands around the dead guy's hands and pulls the trigger and says, with your dying, you were dead, but you still saved us. That happened like 500 times.
Okay.
You know, never be a bazooka guy in Easy Company because you're going to die. So Rock has a handful of doll tags.
So the bazooka is the equivalent of a red shirt.
Yes. Hmm. Yep. He has a bunch of dog tags and he goes up and he's like, hey, Sergeant Rock, Easy Company. And he's like, oh, the Rock of Easy Company. And they come out and he's like, hey, Jeb Stuart, I heard a lot about you in the haunted tank. Captain Cloud, I've heard stories. So they start sharing their stories. They get Martin out. All of a sudden they get captured and they're in front of the tank. Actually, I take it back. I went too far ahead. So they take the pry the armor open and they find out that it is Mademoiselle Marie, head of the French Resistance, cute little redheaded girl. And they're like, wow.
Wait, in the armor?
Yeah, she was in the armor. They put her in the armor.
Huh.
Because apparently it's easier to find somebody in a big piece of armor than it is a little French girl with a red beret.
Huh.
And a machine gun. So they capture them, and the German tank commander's like, all right, I'm going to shoot all of you guys till you tell me which one Martin is. And they're like, and then Mademoiselle Marie goes, oh, you know what? I'm Martin. And they're like, oh, did you ever see a figure like that on a battle doll? That ain't Martin. I'm Martin. Then Cloud says, I'm Martin. Sergeant Stuart says, I'm Martin. Rock decides to run away. They say, oh, that must be Martin. Let's get him. They go over. They blow up the tank. It's all over. They save Mari. And then as this ends, you have everybody, and I'm flying through the story because the story of Battle Classics is much better than this story is. So you have everybody there, and they're getting their awards. Mademoiselle Marie gets citation for, you know, bravery, and then they bring up Lieutenant Cloud, who's now Captain Cloud, and then you get Sergeant Stuart, who is now Lieutenant Stuart, and then she goes to kiss Sergeant Rock and says, congratulations. And she couldn't even spit it out. He goes, I'm not a lieutenant. I'm a sergeant. I'm the top kick of Easy Company. And you know what? That's where I need to be. And then he walks away and goes to fight with Easy Company. That's how the story ends. So the story that is so cool and interesting about Battle Classics is that in this time period in 1978, DC went from 35-cent comics to 50-cent comics. And they called it the DC explosion, where you were going to be getting 44 pages of books, and every comic was going to have your main story, but you would have 2 or 3 different backups in it. So Flash was going to have Green Lantern. Oh, no, it wasn't because he had his own book then. It would be like Firestorm and a couple – Kid okay. Flash would get his own.
So it
would
be like supporting characters yeah. that get their own stories in the back.
So you would get a 22-page story, the regular one, but then you'd get 3 or 4 backup stories. Commandy was going to have OMAC in it. So you had all these things, and they had it all laid out on the last page where the Answer Man's Guide to the DC Explosion, where everybody was going to be. Where's Doc Canary going to be? World's Finest. Where is Man-Bat going to be? Batman family. So every character
that's kind of cool
was going to be in here. Then going through a little bit further, you have a letter from the publisher. And I used to love these as a kid. And I used to be fascinated with Jeanette Kahn. Jeanette Kahn was the publisher and president of DC. She was sort of the Stan Lee at Marvel. She got her start at Dynamite Magazine and all those kids' magazines. So she was a big, big wig in publishing. So she went to DC and she wrote this whole editorial about how, yes, the comic books are going to go 15 cents more. But you're getting 44 pages instead of 22 or 30. You're getting more stuff. You're getting more art. You're going to get the best stuff. She explained all this stuff of what was going on and how this was going to be changing comics forever. 3 months later, the DC explosion became what was known as the DC implosion. Battle Classics was going to be covering all the reprints of war books. Western Classics was obviously going to be the Westerns. Sure. The first issue of Demand Classics was going to be the classic story of Earth 1 and Earth 2 Flashes meeting for the first time. So they had all these new books coming out, all this stuff, subscriptions all went out. Then the DC implosion happened, where 1978 was the beginning of a recession. The gas rationing, we had oil shortages, we had all sorts of trouble all out throughout the world. So the DC explosion ended up, and they were bringing out like 60 books. All of a sudden, it got scaled down to about 22, 23. 3 months after this issue came out, all the DC books went to 40 cents and dropped all page that counts, extra stuff. Yeah. And then you had all these characters that you didn't know where they were going to be again. So it really was a major event that could have changed a lot, but then it fell apart. So then what DC did was kind of learn their lesson and said, why don't we every summer make the books 50 cents? We'll put in extra stories, extra art, and then we'll only do it for 3 months. We'll do it for like the August, September, or the September, October, November issues, which come out June, July, August.
Yep.
And that was a big thing. It's like, oh my gosh. And they called it the summer explosion. So this model became the summer explosion, where a lot of books started to get like characters. People started thinking, what about the Teen Titans? Why don't we bring that? You know what? Fine. We'll put them in a book and we'll see how that plays out.
Yep.
And Teen Titans were able to get their own book after that. So a lot of amazing stuff came out of this DC explosion. There's people that, if you go online, there's a guy that wrote a 15 or 20 page history of what happened. And what ended up happening too was DC took all the books that they were going to put out, photocopied them, and then sent them out to people in like 500 page volumes.
Really?
And those are like, they're priceless.
Yeah.
Because there weren't a lot of them made. It was like, hey, you know what? You worked hard on this. We're going to send you a copy. So there's these 500 page issues and volumes that are out there. I've never even seen one. When I was at DC, when I did a tour all those years ago, and I talked to Paul Levitz, I remember asking him, I go, where's all the DC implosion stuff? And he kind of laughed about it, saying, that's a dirty word. We don't talk about the DC implosion here.
Stop asking questions,
because
kid.
They brought in tons of creators and then had to let them all go.
Uh-huh.
So a really interesting time, but a great book that
came
out of it.
But also like something to keep in perspective when every other week in the current industry, it's like, oh, this is the end of the industry, or oh, they'll never come back from this, or else this is completely falling apart. Like, there's been other times where things have, quote unquote, completely fallen apart.
Yep. I remember, and I remember as a kid, I think for me, because you think about the fact it was kids, I remember getting my comic book allowance and it was based on 35 cents.
Yep.
And
that
I knew
screwed
I
it all up.
Yep. It screwed it up.
I'm still recovering from the move from $2.99 to $3.99.
I mean, that's
and the
$4.99 exact,
comics.
That is the exact thing. Put it in a little kid's perspective. And then also when you have parents, like our big thing was we used to go out Friday nights to go to like grocery shop. We'd go out to eat in Springfield. We would go to like Papa Gino's at the Springdale Mall. Right next to it was the newsstand.
Right.
And my parents would say, okay, you know what? You can get like $3 worth of comics. Then all of a sudden my dad is – working in an industry that has kind of fallen apart, you know, and he was worried about his job. So that had a huge impact on everybody at this time. So a lot of weird stuff happened, but the DC explosion, DC implosion, magic in history.
There you go. Well, that's your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. Now, before we go, another quick reminder that our Summer of Dread is coming up. So if you have not ordered your Judge Dredd Case Files Volume 1, you want to get on that because we're going to be starting soon. And of course, we'll be looking at the two Dread movies and the animated short series as well for our summer watching project, plus some other cool stuff too. So don't forget that's coming up. Again, keep your eyes on the website for more information about that. That's going to do it for this show. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian LaTenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but DriveThru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, DriveThru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets DriveThru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to DriveThruComics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.